If you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. this year, please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving.
We still have a very, very high embryo loss in creation of life in the laboratory. So I think it's very disingenuous to say that it was a pro-life approach to making babies.
And this is just madness to say. And each one of us, all 7 billion, all have these magical divine destinies from forever where we're all going to change the world. You know, that's what's destroying the world.
Another way to think about what I've called cliche theology is your rhetoric running your theology, or is the theology running the rhetoric?
Moms in labor, love, issues, etc.
The 2017 Religion News Association annual Top 10 Religion Stories of the Year poll had an interesting number one religion story for 2017. The story is conservative evangelicals gained strong representation in the Trump administration, notably with Vice President Mike Pence and on the president's informal religious advisory body. Trump maintains strong grassroots support among white evangelicals, polls show. Also, President Trump was named the top religion newsmaker by the same poll. But is that a story? Is that a story from 2017 or just a story maybe from 2016? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, December the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the top religion stories of 2017 with Terry Mattingly. Then we'll study the Christmas hymn, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, with Dr. Arthur Just. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
What was your top story, if you were compiling the list, what was your top story for 2017 with the religious angle?
That's a really interesting question. I have to admit that when I sat down to think of it, the very first thing that jumped into my mind was Sutherland Springs. I mean, growing up in Texas and my father being a Southern Baptist minister who was in those kinds of churches, you know, and early in his career in Texas, that just really hit me. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that, frankly, the idea of someone walking into a church and killing people was not that new. And also that what made Sutherland Springs different was just the sheer size of the bloodshed. So I kept thinking about it, and man, we had some remarkable, huge stories in religion this year. And when I got to the end and wrote up my own list based on the Religion News Association nominations, my number one story was the alt-right in Charlottesville. And I picked Charlottesville number one simply because it combined so many elements of other stories that were happening during the year, but it was undeniably an earthquake of a single event. It combined a lot of ideas, but you had the event itself. You had the racial element that ran through much of the year. You had the crazy, in my opinion, gasoline on flame remarks of President Trump. You had anti-Semitism in it. You had the response from religious communities, both in that area and nationwide, was so strong, all the way down to the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest non-Catholic flock in American life, passing a resolution that basically linked the alt-right with Satan. In the end, Charlottesville was my number one because it combined so many things, yet it was a specific moment in time that I think just horrified the nation.
What did you make of the RNA list, in particular its top one, and I'll just read it for you. This is their number one religion story of the year. Conservative evangelicals gained strong representation in the Trump administration, notably with Vice President Mike Pence and on the president's informal religious advisory body. Trump maintains strong grassroots support among white evangelicals, polls show.
Let me answer that on three levels. First of all, Pence was named vice president by Trump and was elected to that position in last year's story. And if I remember correctly, wasn't Trump in the evangelicals basically number one last year in the RNA poll? I don't have that in front of me, but that's my memory. Second, there's a tendency when you're doing polling to say the big story, is it the big story of the year or is it the big event of the year? Evangelicals and Trump, to me, is not a story at any one particular moment in time. It's more like an idea. And sure enough, it's an idea that affected a lot of different specific stories that made headlines. Everything from the nomination of Justice Gorsuch and Supreme Court cases involving religious liberty and a host of other things, religious reactions, evangelicals, et cetera, on immigration. We can go on and on. But the key to me is that that was more like an idea. This is the big idea of the year. And quite frankly, I thought to some degree that was the big idea of last year. And you and I have talked about this a lot. So the third level, I think right now, just like I said the other day on an earlier podcast, I think right now everybody still is searching for someone to blame for the existence of Donald Trump. And white evangelicals is overwhelmingly the choice of the mainstream press. And that makes them basically stormtroopers in a Star Wars movie, the hordes coming in to sack Rome. And thus, that had to be number one, because for a lot of journalists, that's just, they can't believe it's still happening. I can honestly tell you that if I was drawing up my own list, I would not even have included that item in my list for nomination, even though it's a huge subject in the news, but it also affected some other specific events that were in the news. And those show up in the poll and other places. There's like I said, so there's a tendency in these polls to pick the big idea of the year, whether it's politics or whatever, and just say, okay, the religion part of that was the big religion story of the year. Healthcare was the number one story of the year. So the big event becomes religious support and opposition to healthcare. You know what I'm saying? It's like you attach yourself to it. So that I had very mixed feelings about that. And I thought, if anything, but when we get into other events in the list, such as the Roy Moore thing in Alabama, as someone who pays very close attention to evangelical Protestantism, my big idea for this year was that the divisions inside Protestantism, and especially within conservative Protestants, if there was a big idea looming over this year as opposed to 2016, it was that the divisions inside evangelicalism got so much more obvious and pronounced this year, when the number one story in the RNA poll seems to suggest that they're still out there just marching along. And I just don't know how anybody could believe that at this point. It is obvious that white evangelical Protestants were a huge part of Trump's primary base, and by that I mean primary elections, and they remain a large part of his loyal supporters' base. But then you have lots of other evangelicals who voted for him reluctantly, and I think you're beginning to see some fall off in their support for him at this time. And then you have the fact that if you continue to judge white evangelical Protestant support for candidates like Moore and Trump based just on what happens on Election Day, when they're running against people who are quarterbacks and stars of the Planned Parenthood All-Star team. That's just not a fair assessment of whether those evangelicals strongly support the likes of a Trump or a Moore. Now, just because I understand I didn't vote for Donald Trump. If I was in Alabama, I would not have cast a ballot for Roy Moore no matter what happened. But I understand lots of evangelicals bit their lips, their tongues, and whatever else till they bled and walked into those voting booths and pulled the lever to vote against the other candidate when everything in their soul screamed out that they shouldn't be voting for people with the moral questions and the constitutional and government questions related to them, like these Republican candidates.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're going over the top Religion News Association stories from 2017. When we come back, President Trump was named Religion Newsmaker of the Year. To what extent is this entire list driven by media obsession with the president?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christians should engage the news media because of what we do so many other things for. We care about the truth.
Molly Hemingway of Fox News speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And we do not let error go uncorrected in other ways, and we should not let error go uncorrected in the news media. We should be thoughtful news consumers. We should help journalists who know very little about our faith. I mean, I hear people complain about the media, and they complain about how a story is covered. Well, write a letter to them when they err, and gently and nicely talk to them about what they got wrong.
You can listen to Molly Hemingway's presentation, Making the Case for Christians Engaging the News Media, and all of the speakers at our 2017 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the top religion stories of 2017. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. If you appreciate our weekly media coverage of religion interviews with Terry Mattingly, I know many of you do, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation to Issues Etc. No gift is too small. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of 2017. Terry, President Trump was also named in the same poll as the Religion Newsmaker of the Year. To what extent do you think this entire list is driven by some media obsession with the president?
Totally. I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. Now, if I was picking my own religion newsmaker of the year, I would have voted for Paula White Cain, the head of Trump's kind of evangelical outreach, the Pentecostal pastor at the heart of his outreach there. I would have said that her ascendancy during this year, it's not an in particular story, but that's who I would have picked as my newsmaker of the year.
And why in particular is that?
Well, she was already in the public eye during 2016 in the campaign. But this year it became very evident how powerful she was with that core evangelical Trump base, that 30% or 40% that just is going to be for Trump no matter what. She kind of was the engineer of their inroads into the actual structures of the White House this year. I also think she symbolizes that to me because she is not a person that evangelicals would be united on. You know, her style of Pentecostalism, some people would call it prosperity gospel. That may or may not be fair. But once again, she's an example of how divided evangelicals are when it comes to their relationship to this White House. So if I was going to symbolize that in any way on my ballot, it would have been choosing her as the religion newsmaker of the year over choosing Donald Trump.
We've dealt with the first two. The third on the list of top religion stories in 2017 is the U.S. travel ban on majority Muslim nations or people from majority Muslim nations. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, just to make sure that listeners are clear on that, you had the evangelicals and Trump thing was number one. They did have Charlottesville number two. I picked it number one. The RNA had the Charlottesville march number two. So number three is the Muslim ban. That's a big one. I'm not sure I would have had it three, but I know it would have been in my top 10 and probably in the first half of it. Once again, we have this issue of whether it's a travel ban on Muslims when the language of the original things that rolled out made it that it was clear that government officials were going to be trying to favor minority religious groups that were being persecuted or couldn't get fair immigration status in those countries. And the irony of that is that includes some Muslim religious minorities. I mean, in the context of Syria, that would certainly include Shia. And then you had the Yazidis and you had other. So you had some Muslim-related groups that actually fell into the protected status under that order. So I've always argued that that was a big story, but that it was somewhat more complex. I've heard other people make the valid point that whatever the actual reality was about that order, this was the symbol of Muslim-bashing Trump people. This was their calling card. Trump backers who want to bash Muslims, this was their flag to wave. I don't think that's a fair representation of everyone who supported that effort. It might be a fair representation of the rhetoric that Trump used in the campaign on behalf of that effort. But I know behind the scenes, if you look at the actual wording, there were some people who knew a lot about the shape of religious persecution in the Middle East who at some point tried to make that order, let's say, more realistic and more constructive.
Number four is President Trump breaking with precedent by recognizing the city of Jerusalem as the capital of the nation of Israel. Why is that an important story? Does it deserve to be four?
Well, yeah, it would have been in my top five. I don't know exactly where, but that's a huge story. But at the same time, the wording for how you describe that, let's see if I can reach over and grab a copy of how the RNA put that. President Trump breaks precedent by the way you read it, breaks precedent by recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The way I worded it in my own column on this topic was subtly different. I said Trump causes global debate by acting on previous U.S. calls for recognition of Jerusalem as capital of Israel. You see, there's nothing new about an American president or an American political leader calling for Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel, or even saying, we hope that happens. What was different is that instead of just simply making a, some would say, cynical political statement about that issue, Trump stood up and did it. Now, the minute you say that, at Get Religion, our own Ira Rifkin has done some wonderful materials to help reporters cover this issue, in which he notices that the minute he makes this big controversial statement, the horizon line for that actually happen starts shrinking into the distance. I mean, we're now hearing statements, there's no way they can do this in 3 years. You know, they may get started on doing this in 3 years. You know, so once again, the actual controversial action of opening a door in Jerusalem, that still remains an issue of whether we'll see that happen. In some writing that I did about this at Get Religion, something I noted is if the role of some of the strongest opposition to Jerusalem being the capital of Israel is among the ancient Christian churches of the Middle East, because they see Jerusalem as obviously playing a major role in their religion as well, just as Muslims do. And the Eastern Christian churches have continued to call for an international status. However, a subtle thing happened about, I believe it was a year and a half ago. Russia, which does not exactly play a weak role in the current Middle East, especially in Syria, Russia has come out and said, when we have a peace treaty between Israel and the Palestinians, we would recognize half of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and half of Jerusalem as the capital of the Palestinian people and a new Palestinian homeland, which is an interesting way of splitting that issue. But it's interesting. I wonder what Christians in the Middle East would think of Russia's stance on that. Frankly, I think they would cheer it.
Number five is Myanmar security forces having driven out more than 500,000 Muslims into Bangladesh, I believe. What's the story? And just the number of 500,000 requires a top five listing there.
Oh, it's an incredibly important story, but it's also a perfect example of how little the American media and the American people, let's be honest, how little attention we devote to what happens in that part of the world. And by that, I mean kind of that arc between Pakistan, India, and over into Thailand, and just that whole kind of southern part of Asia. Now, this is a huge story. And one of the reasons it's important is that we tend to see the world as this Muslims versus Christians thing. And here you have a situation in that part of the world where you have Buddhist clerics at the forefront of attempts to persecute, in some cases slaughter, Muslim believers. Then you have in India, you have the Hindu majority that's done so much in recent years to kind of solidate power there, even to the point that you could say they may have gone too far and might kind of overplay their hand. So no, I think this is a huge story. And I would say this is the one that if you walked up to the typical American and read them the stories on this list, I'm not sure they would even know where this is, let alone would they see it on the front page of their newspaper on a regular basis. And I think that's tragic.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the top religion stories of 2017 on this Friday, December 29th. When we come back, the story that was rolling around in his head for a possible number one made it to number six, the church shootings in Sutherland Springs, Texas. If you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. this year, please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During December, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to our Ministry of the Month, Ministry Focus. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Common and experienced firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Here at the end of the year, we are talking about the top religion stories of 2017. Sutherland Springs, that church shooting in Texas, did make number six. Terry, you said before that it was kind of rolling around in your head for a number one spot.
Yeah, and notice how, as so often happens with events of this kind, the story then jumps immediately to things related to gun control. And the further we got kind of down the road with this story, the more it turned into press coverage of churches deciding to increase their security efforts in their sanctuaries. And frankly, there seemed to be a presumption among a lot of reporters that this meant 60-70% of people walking into church pews with concealed weapons. And frankly, there has been a lot of very good coverage. One of the best stories about it has been written by our own Bobby Ross Jr. And then I wrote a column about it myself with someone who's been active in this field for almost coming up on 20 years. This is not what the experts in church security are recommending. They're recommending that churches need strategic, especially big churches, but churches large and small need some kind of strategic security, maybe with one or two off-duty police officers or someone in their church who not only has a concealed weapons permit but has some certificate of extensive training. In my column, the expert I quoted said something like, if you start having people in your church, everybody starts pulling out a gun, nothing good is going to happen under those circumstances. Just because someone used to fire a gun when they were in the military doesn't mean they're going to do anything positive with it in a crisis situation that's going to test the level of their training. So no, this was an important story, but at the time it happened, I heard several people say, no, this is just getting too common. This is going to be out of the headlines in about 2-3 weeks, and everybody will go right back to saying, this can't happen at my church.
Did that story suffer from coming on the heels of the Las Vegas shooting where 58 were killed and more than 100 injured? Just in terms of its scale, I'm talking about the kind of the emotional impact it has on people and the sticking power story has after some guy lets loose into a concert of crowd there and kills 58 in less than 10 minutes. I'm not trying to sound crass, Terry, but you hear about 26 killed in a church and you say, oh, there you go again.
Well, yeah, except both of those stories vanished really quick. I was stunned at the degree we still don't know anything certain about what happened in Vegas. It's a comment on life in America right now that both of those stories had a shelf life of like, what, 2-3 weeks? I found both of those amazing. Frankly, the actual attention given to Sutherland Springs at the moment that it happened, you know, I thought that the coverage was actually pretty good and that national press jumped on that to a degree that was larger than I thought they would.
Number 7 in the Religion News Association poll is Roy Moore, both winning the nomination to the U.S. Senate in his state, and he has a long history of making news, then losing the race.
Yeah, I'm not sure Roy Moore would have been in my top 10. I think this is seen as a loss for Donald Trump, even though Trump originally campaigned for people against Moore. I think this was just another example of the splits inside the Republican Party and the splits inside churches and inside evangelicalism. Rather than Roy Moore, what I would have put in my top 10 was another story that fell out of the top 10 for the RNA, and frankly, I was surprised. I was going to put the Me Too campaign on sexual abuse. The religious elements of that were very powerful. Everybody, I mean, justifiably is focused on Hollywood and the creative community because the names there are so big. But if you were on Twitter or you were on social media during the 2 or 3 weeks when Me Too was a really big thing, hashtag Church Too was big. It was important, and I would have had it in my top 10. And I would have included Roy Moore to some degree as being connected to what happened in those weeks. Because there's no question that a lot of what he was accused of, and I thought the Washington Post reporting on this was, I questioned the timing, but not the substance. I thought it was very strong coverage. Wasn't that right there in that explosion of the Me Too? And I thought Church Too was, if anything, undercovered. In some ways, think of that as the Protestant side of the sexual abuse crisis that has received so much attention in a Catholic context, when based on the research I've seen, the numbers in Protestant congregations and denominations are right up there with the Catholic numbers. And that's a very undercovered story. So I would, instead of Roy Moore, I would have put Church 2 in my top 10.
Roy Moore did demonstrate something to me, and this is as the casual observer of the news. It took something like Roy Moore, this horse riding, cowboy hat wearing, I'll just call him kind of a throwback to a South that may have never, ever existed, to temporarily, ever so temporarily, push Donald Trump from the top news stories for a day or two until he jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, what we have there is a human being who symbolizes the old guard religious right and their style and their values, and that's the heart of the primary season Trump base. So to some degree, Roy was kind of even embarrassing to the Trump people. But he represents a very old South. Like you said, an exaggeration that may not have ever really existed. But that's who he was to me. And he won kind of for the same reason that Trump did, which was that once you have that base among the old guard religious right, and it's probably bigger in Alabama than it is nationwide. But once you have that base, and then the Democrats hand you a left-of-center, strong Planned Parenthood, weak on religious liberty candidate, what was it, one or two weeks ago that I asked you the question, how would Roy Moore have fared if the Democrats had run an African-American pro-life woman? How would Moore have done against that Democrat?
He would have been buried.
He would have been buried. And it would have given the rest of the evangelical coalition somebody else to vote for. And I think at that point they would have gone right back to blue dog conservative Democrat status, which used to be the dominant populist political model of the old South. I think they would have reverted to that quickly if the Democrats had given them such a person to vote for. And so as it is, I expect Doug Jones to hold his Senate seat for 2 years. And I pretty much predict that the next time when he goes back up for reelection to the Senate, I think you're going to see the GOP roll out a qualified conservative who reunites both sides of the evangelical coalition. Yeah, I don't know any names or anything right now, but I would hold out real hope that when they run someone against him, the Republicans will nominate either a woman or an African American to run against him.
How is the entrance into the federal courts of numerous conservatives with the Trump administration and a Republican-controlled Senate, notably Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, how is that a religion story?
Well, it's a big story, but it's a big story because of what got left out. Falling out of the top 10 on the RNA poll is the whole religious liberty story. And Gorsuch is a big story because it creates the old divided court with Kennedy sitting at the switch, the swing vote centrist, so to speak. Gorsuch, to some degree, his presence on the court reestablishes the court under Scalia, if it turns out that he votes in the manner of a Scalia. But of course, Scalia's views on religious liberty were quite complex, but we don't have time to get into that. But this is a big story. I'm not sure I would have picked this particular item to symbolize that. I would have said the waves of stories that peaked with the Colorado cake shop, Masterpiece cake shop case hitting the Supreme Court, I would have said that was a top 10 story. But at the same time, we don't have the ruling yet. To some degree, that postpones that story. But I would have put that in the top 10 over just the fact that Trump kept his promise and did nominate Gorsuch.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but that ruling is due probably sometime very early spring.
Yeah.
When it comes down, one way or the other, does it make the top 10 list next year?
Oh, of course. Especially if it plays into the world is ending view of the left. If you get a court decision that in any way reestablishes religious liberty as a prime value, or even makes it possible for people to have any form of defense under religious liberty as opposed to sexual liberty, I think that will be a huge deal. And as I think I said in a previous podcast, Justice Kennedy is such an interesting figure there in the sense that he's become a hero for the gay rights cause, for obvious reasons. Yet at the same time, his record on freedom of expression, First Amendment cases, is also very strong. So if you looked at the transcript of the oral testimony on that day, it was very apparent that the defenders of Masterpiece Cake Shop went in there and played that freedom of expression card over and over. To some degree, they were reading Kennedy his own greatest hits.
When we come back, 10 more minutes with Terry Mattingly, as we look at the top religion stories of 2017, then we're going to be studying the Christmas hymn, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, with Dr. Arthur Just. When we come back, the religion angle on all those NFL players who kneel during the singing of the national anthem. It's number 9 on the list. We'll talk with Terry Mattingly about it after this.
Listen to the best of the church's Christmas music during the entire Christmas season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. During the 12 days of Christmas, Lutheran Public Radio, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy. 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
It's tough to be Lutheran in America these days. Our families, our schools and churches, even our most deeply held beliefs and values are under fire. We need unchanging truth in a world full of confusion. The Lutheran Witness magazine can help. For less than a quarter a day, get the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture, delivered monthly right to your mailbox. Learn more at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
We're discussing 2017's top religion stories with Terry Mattingly of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, number 9 was the NFL players kneeling during the national anthem. By what angle was it a religion story?
Well, they were praying. A lot of those players, if you actually watched them, a lot of them were praying. And the fact that you had key leaders in that were African-American Christians who have talked pretty openly about their faith, including Kaepernick, there was prayer involved in this, and some of them were a part of other efforts to make the subject of racial inequality a subject of prayer. And, of course, the black church would be right at the heart of that. Now, I was kind of thought it strange that the RNA linked the kneeling on the sidelines over to the issue of Confederate symbols. I really saw it much more being linked to violence issues involving law enforcement, and, you know, and some related cases there, the Black Lives Matter movement. But there were religious elements there, and I think I would have had that in my top 10. Maybe it would have been close.
So the last one on the RNA list is one that I spent a lot of time thinking about it because I happen to be a Lutheran, and that is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Now, I am not surprised at all to see it number 10 on the list. I'm actually a little surprised that it made the list, maybe 13 or 14, because no one really in the media was talking about it too much until right about the 29th of October,
yeah,
the anniversary being the 31st. What did you make of its inclusion?
This is just a classic religion news event that makes it into these sorts of polls. You know, like when Anglicans vote on sexuality, when Methodists vote on something, this is a classic sort of action by the mainline world. But if you look at it, let's face it, the Protestant Reformation is a pretty big deal. And Luther is the symbolic fuse on the Protestant Reformation. So I'm not surprised this is in the top 10. I'm frankly surprised that this whole thing has not created more coverage than it has. Has the Luther anniversary, like, say, broken into 60 Minutes yet?
I don't believe it has. I mean, it made it to PBS in the form of kind of a docudrama.
Yeah.
And there were stories, again, not until within days of the anniversary, that made the big market newspapers, and I believe some of the news magazines online, but I don't think it was covered by kind of your old school primetime TV / cable.
Yeah, so this is just kind of your, like I said, your classic mainstream religion beat story that you find your local angle and you pitch it, and it ends up on a Sunday page one in a major metro newspaper. This is like the old religion beat strikes back kind of story. Now, you know, you think, now what would it take for it to get on 60 Minutes? Well, I can already tell you that. It would take something in Germany with some sort of clash between right-wing Lutherans, who would be instantly the bad guys, right-wing Lutherans versus Muslim immigrants. That would put that on 60 Minutes, wouldn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. And probably you would immediately say that you would have people standing there holding their microphones in front of images in the background saying, isn't it sad that we don't have that rebel Luther around today to help remold our society once again and accept these immigrants into the fabric of a changing Europe or something like that? The old Luther was a rebel, which means if you're a rebel, you're a Lutheran. That kind of an equation, which on several levels to me is kind of strange, but let's face it, a lot of what Luther did, and when the Luther Rebellion, to some degree, I think historians would say, even got out of his hands, it was when it started getting mixed up with politics and military and economics and whatever. So who are we to say things wouldn't be the same today?
Terry, before we ask you to pick the top religion story from 2018, let's go back to last year and let's hear what you predicted would be the number one religion story in 2017.
Well, you know, I've already seen an article by the great Richard Osling of Time Magazine, the Associated Press, and now he writes a kind of a weekly here's what's coming up memo for Get Religion. Osling has already turned in his articles on that, and depending on what Trump does, and depending on who he names to the court, and whether any other court slots come open in the next couple of years, you would have to say religious liberty remains the item that you have to keep watching. But I think as long as I've known you, hasn't that basically been what I've said almost every year?
I think so.
But can you deny the impact that's having on American life? And when you look at religious liberty broadly defined, isn't that what we're talking about in large parts of the world? Pakistan, Egypt, Syria, Aleppo. I mean, all the religious rights and the rights of religious minorities is just remains the flashpoint for much of the pain and suffering that goes on in our world today. So I'm just going to be consistent, say the same thing all over again.
So Terry, how did you do?
Well, my short answer, if you asked me to apply this to 2018, my short answer would be what he said, in the sense that with the cake shop case looming to come out from the Supreme Court, I think you would have to say, and depending on how people react to it and what happens in terms of concrete actions, I would certainly have to say that I think religious liberty is the story for 2018 as well. Now, I would like to play a, no pun intended, Trump card here. If Donald Trump is, let's say the Democrats take the House of Reps and the Democrats vote to impeach Trump, or something substantial comes out of the never-ending Russia investigations. You could make a case that if we actually end up with a President Pence, you know, either through impeachment or it's hard to joke about the death of a president, but let's say he overdoses on Diet Coke and McDonald's hamburgers or something like that. If any scenario creates a President Pence, then I think at that point you'd have to say that that would be the story of the year. I'm not predicting that. I'm not hoping that, although as someone who voted against Trump, part of me would love to see someone other than Donald Trump as president. I've been very honest about that all along, but I would never wish tragedy on somebody. Does he deserve to be impeached? I would say, let's wait and see. I'm certainly willing to listen to the evidence, and I think the press could do a much better job of covering that evidence, but that's another question. So pending that wild card over there, I'll go right back to the bank and say that the First Amendment and religious liberty remains the story of our times in the United States.
I'm just curious, with about 30 seconds here, the President Pence story. How would that headline or that lead read it at the top of the list of the RNA list there? Would it be President Pence, a conservative evangelical, ..
Oh, he'll be described as dangerous. Don't forget his whole crazy relationship with his wife. I mean, about this whole thing about trying to protect faithfulness and fidelity and all that, which actually doesn't look all that bad now after all the Me Too stuff. No, Pence at that moment will immediately surge into the front ranks of the most dangerous people in the world. And you can take that prediction to the bank.
1 minute. If you had one piece of advice to give reporters for next year, covering the many stories that will naturally unfold, what would it be?
Well, okay, I'll play a wild card here, a different one this time. And this is based on the advice of Richard Osling. Don't we have the 50th anniversary of the Pope's birth control decision coming up with Humani Vitae? I would think some sort of major look at American Catholics and whether or not more than 5% of them are practicing a faith that in any way resembles the Catholic Catechism. I would think this could end up being a year, if things fell into place, where that anniversary would become a hook for substantial and needed coverage. You've heard me say many times that I think the most overlooked story in American religion is that something like 2-4% of American Catholics ever go to confession, which is a linchpin in the sacramental system of the Catholic faith. So maybe there'll be some sort of American Catholic story emerge that symbolizes the 50th anniversary of the birth control decision.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
If you're in the market for a home mortgage, home improvement, car, or student loan in 2018, be sure to check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org. When we come back, we're going to take up the Christmas hymn, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, and its first stanza, O Jesus Christ, Thy Manger Is, my paradise at which my soul reclineth. For there, O Lord, doth lie the Word made flesh for us. Herein thy grace forth shineth. Dr. Arthur Just will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Here's what you'll find in the latest Issues Etc. journal. I've written a column titled A Letter to Ex-Evangelicals. Pastor Rob Kieslowski has detailed his journey to the Lutheran Christian tradition, and Dr. Ken Sherb writes about the story of an entire city's journey to the Reformation, Strasbourg, France. We'll send you the Issues Etc. journal for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org, the free online Issues Etc. journal.